Hey everybody, it's Blake.
And this is Drew.
And you're listening to Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Controllers podcast.
Everybody, welcome to episode 149 of the podcast. We got a game about a serial killer for you. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. I don't know if you've had any other games with serial killers. I mean, there's plenty of games that have killers in them, but this is a serial killer game with a weird kind of a style to it. That's why we kind of we're going to bring it up, because we don't play too many serial killer games. I can't even think of another serial killer game off the top of my head.
There's a lot. You're not playing as a serial killer. You're like trying to survive.
I'm trying to stop the serial killer. Well, you're not even trying to survive it until the end, I guess. But before we get into that, we'll talk about the where we can find the podcast on the internet and other various things real quick. You can find us on the fewer and fewer social media platforms as those fluctuate. Not chasing the social media trends on where to put our stuff. So if you want to reach out to us, you can try on a like Blue Sky, and maybe easiest would be our email, which is the twosmokingcontrollers@gmail.com. That'd probably be the best way to reach out right now, because I'm literally not chasing social media trends.
No.
It's not happening. But, you know, more important than that, we just want folks to come to our Twitch stream. This is where we hang out with our cousin / podcast editor, Brian, and play various video games. We try to get away from playing just Dark Souls games all the time, so we've played a bunch of different smattering of things over the years, and we're currently shooting bugs and murdering frogs.
Frog beings.
Frog humanoids and Earth Defense Force 5? Five. It's Brian's first time playing an EDF game, and we're seeing why we're having a really good time with it, because it's just good, stupid fun. Imagine it's like the B version of people being loving Helldivers 2. Mm-hmm. Without playing Helldivers 2, this it sounds like this would be a version of that, maybe.
Probably a less hectic.
I'm not sure. We'll play Helldivers 2 at some point, especially since it's coming to Xbox and stuff like that. Which, granted, we're playing EDF on PlayStation 5 anyway, so it's not like we couldn't just play EDF on PS5. But Helldivers 2. But you're just shooting bugs, fighting aliens, blowing up buildings. It's a good old classic B movie game that's just a whole lot of fun. So come for that. So we have I don't have the list in front of me. We have our Patreon page and the store and stuff like that. You can come there and support the podcast and wear various things. I don't know if you were standing with me. We recently went, about a month ago or so, out of town to one of our, like a birthday party out where our mom lives. And one of our mom's friends was there. I don't remember her name. But she said she recognized me from our mom wearing our shirt.
Our mom's merch. Number one fan.
Yeah, gotta love the mom support. But yeah, she wasn't wearing the shirt that day. But like, her friend was like, "Hey, I think I recognize you from your mom's shirt." I was like, "Oh, this is weird.
That's awkward."
I was like, "Oh, that's great." But anyway, that's funny. So you can wear the merch and get random strangers to recognize you from a cartoon in a...
Yeah,
playing the person you've never met before. So that was pretty fun. I forgot to tell you that. I forgot to show them a podcast. Yeah. It's pretty funny. The Patreon, of course, gets you the episodes early. I also post our guest videos on there, because we don't really do anything with those. Maybe a better podcast would, but we post the video of us talking with our guests on over the Zoom. I just post that unedited on there in case people want to see the people we're talking to. We're about to have a new one coming up. We'll talk at the end of the episode about an upcoming guest we have. What else am I missing? Mm-hmm. Store, Patreon, Twitch. Those are the things
those are the main things.
Twitch is the main thing we care about. So that's where we're having the most fun, I feel like. So with that, I guess we'll let Blake pick up talking about a game. This is a unique game. That's why we wanted to bring it to the podcast, because it's not well heard of. I think it might have, like, I feel like Daniel or somebody told me that the game just come to PlayStation Plus or something like that, maybe. So it might be available for folks to get their hands on pretty easily if you're playing on PlayStation. Don't quote me on that.
The game that we'll be talking about today is called Killer Frequency. Is a first person, I don't even know, it's a first person horror comedy
adventure
game,
because you're making little dialogue choices to change the events of what's happening.
So it originally came out June 1st 2023. It's a fairly new game. It's not even the newest one for the company, but it is a newer game.
Oh, really?
It is on the Unity engine.
There we go.
Whenever they show it, I like to advertise that. It is published and developed by the same group team, and it's called Team 17.
Oh, they've developed too. I know Team 17's been doing developing and publishing since at least, if not before, the Xbox 360 era. They had so many Xbox arcade games.
Yeah, they're publishing
Worms and like Explosion Man and stuff like that.
Well, they're also the developer of Worms.
Yeah,
which I was about to get into. It's like they've been around a while. They're based out of Wakefield, England. They started December 7th, 1990. As of, I guess it says as of 2019, that's the most recent thing I could find. As of 2019, they had 200-plus employees amongst their two studios. They have developed, I didn't even look into their published thing, that was a lot bigger and too hard to count. But they've developed 64 games, which is pretty, that's pretty
that's
nice.
A lot. That's nice. That's a lot for anybody.
Of those 60,
if a company develops two or three games, they're doing pretty good to survive.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And of those 64, 27 are a Worms title.
Well, I'd even played a Worms game. We've had some fun with some Worms back in the day, but you got to have people willing to play with you, because it's very, very multiplayer. You got to have playing against AI isn't fun, because you're not. Nailing and torturing a friend. You know, I know it sounds weird, but like, you're shooting an AI, it's like, whatever. If you're like getting the perfect aim, if you don't know about Worms games, about aiming weapons on a 2D, well, there's some 3D ones too, but aiming weapons and trying to get your aim just right with all these fancy weapons. And it's a lot of, I remember being a lot of fun back in the day, but you got to play with friends, otherwise you're just.
Oh, yeah, so we have some people that might play with them. Maybe we could do like a night of it or something, because they're usually.
I'm sure we get Brian to play.
Yeah, she'll be a twist his arm. But the majority of their stuff, they've done 64 games, majority of which is Worms, and they had another one, like the second contender I could find was something called Alien Breed, and they did 9 of those.
I feel like I played an Alien Breed on the Xbox 360. Top down, running through like a space station.
I think kind of so. Shoot. Yeah.
I think. Did you play it? I think
probably.
Faint memories.
And they've tickled in a couple of other areas. One being this game called The Escapist. For those, they're like these, like, are they voxel art? Or they're a pixel art little top down thing, and you're just trying to escape from somewhere. Sometimes there's a jail. Sometimes there's you know, this, but like. They didn't start it, but they helped develop a couple of the more recent versions. They did a Escapist Walking Dead, The Escapist 2, and then something called The Survivalist. And those,
I feel like, I've seen the thumbnails for those games, and because of the pixel, I was,
they're all
like,
from like the last like 2015 and 4. They've made 3 or 4 of those. And one kind of out of left field that I thought was like really weird is they helped co-developed Overcooked 2, and people really seem to like the Overcooked games.
Mm-hmm. And then Love/slash hate them.
Yeah, there's a smattering of other games in there too. But it's a majority Worms and Alien Breed.
Yeah, I didn't know there's even new Alien Breed games, but or even when the most recent Worms game would have been.
The most recent Worms game was Worms Rumble, and that came out in 2020. And the most recent Alien Breed was, just a quick scroll, was 2010, and it was Alien Breed 3 Descent, because they did like Alien Breed, and they did like, you know, other subtitles as far as actual continuations. That was in 2010. That's really not that far ago, long ago.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
So that franchise is dead, dude.
But they're steadily putting out Worms, Battlegrounds, Clans,
yeah.
Worms Party Remastered and stuff like that. Well, Worms of Mass Destruction. They did Worms. I like them. And cool thing is, like, one of those things is, like, as you're, like, going through a company, you're always worried you're going to find some sort of, like, travesty nowadays.
Seems to be the trend.
But as far as I can tell,
it's like, we make some pretty cool games, but we hate black people. I'm like, dude, come on.
Or this dude's being arrested for, you know, groping all of, only hiring female employees, yeah, or like, something.
Chill,
you know,
out. Just make some video games, dude.
But as far as I can tell, no, there's no negative. They're just a quiet.
Don't take my joke and snip it out and put it on the internet.
God, yeah, please don't.
But that's just like the, like, you can't like a game developer anymore, but it's because of the, you can't like their game because their leaders are trash people. I don't know.
See, they've just been doing well, you know, knocking stuff out of the park, making cool things. They originally started way back on, what was that company called? Like on the Amiga. All right, that's where they first did their thing, and it was actually two separate individuals. They were called, one was called 17-Bit Software, and then developer was called Team 7.
Hmm.
And they merged a couple years later, like from like in 91 they started working together, in 95 they merged to create Team 17. Hmm. And then they've been like I said, when I say knocking out of the park, like, they've been doing very well.
Yeah. Or consistently, because I mean, they're not like a, yeah. Team 17's not a household name. Neither is Worms to have that many games.
No, but like when I say they're doing well enough that they're not in any sort of, like, they're not making billions of dollars like, yeah, some people, but they're satisfied. They're coming in, putting in 9 to 5, and not having to they've cultivated a good work. They're not having to cram or anything like that. They're just kind of like, hey, here's our game. We know you'll like it. We're going to work on something else. And they do test the waters with other things, but the majority, like I said, of their games have been Worms. But and most recently, it's a public. They are a public company and publicly traded. And the alternate investment market, this big thing that, like, tells you what companies are worth, this and that. The last tally is they're worth 230 euros. 230 million euros.
Add the million.
Yeah, add the million. 230, which is, that's a perfectly fine for a small company. And I'm sure they get Christmas bonuses, and I'm sure that they get weekends off. And, you know, like, I would rather work at something like that than a billion-dollar company and having to cram a constantly work, you know, 20-hour days and 50-hour, you know, 70-80-hour week. I just, mm-hmm, just cool. They're making money. They're satisfied, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. They're not in a panic spiral like some of the bigger publishers.
No, nowadays, because they're so, you know, we gotta get our sponsors and get our stockholders. We don't really care about the gamers. We gotta make sure they're happy so they keep giving us money, which is whatever. That's just a sad state that things are in nowadays. Now back to Killer Frequency and everything that we're talking about for, but I said Team 17, kudos, great. This is their most recent game in 2023. I didn't see if they were working on anything else.
That's weird. I swore earlier you said they had a game after this.
I thought they did, but that was like publishing. That wasn't their developing, unfortunately. But so here's hoping that they're working on something else.
Yeah, but 5 years, it's a Worms game. They're due for a Worms game.
Yeah.
I've seen Worms Rumble. I just didn't know what kind of, it's hard to download or purchase a Worms game if you don't have friends to play with.
Yeah, I think they've been trying to expand into like other markets and stuff like that. Oh, dang. When I said that they haven't had anything bad, they have.
You hadn't scrolled far enough?
I didn't scroll far enough. There's cutting any of your bonuses, shoddy quality assurances, buggy states and time crunches, HR hiding sexual harassment cases and manipulating company reviews on websites. God dang it. Never mind, I spoke badly. CEO of marketing being forced to retire. Yeah. So never mind.
Always got to scroll a little bit further.
Yeah.
And everybody in leadership roles are trash.
Yeah, it says October 2023, they did lay off 50 jobs inside their company. Marketing, quality assurance, programming.
Yeah, let's lay off quality assurance.
Yeah. So never mind. That's on me for not looking far enough. Dang it. I was excited. I was like, maybe they're just doing good, but no.
Nobody is in the game industry.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry for that downer. But we got to support the employees, not the employers. So, you know, these people work on a game and they deserve their recognition.
Yeah. I don't want to get to the spiel. But like, stop boycotting games because the leaders of these companies are garbage. Like, I know it's tough to, like, I got to stand for something. Find something else to stand for. The leaders of these companies aren't making these games. Like somebody said, it's these programmers and these developers who are actually making these games. So support their hard work and buy their games and play their games. Don't worry about these trash leaders who sit in office and think about the next person they're going to touch. Like, yeah. Support the people who work really hard to make these games.
And, you know, them getting fired for no reason. Like, they worked on it. But so now we're getting to the fun thing. This is actually Team 17's first foray into VR. Though it was released...
We didn't play the VR version. I didn't know
it was released on worldwide on all consoles, Xbox, PlayStation, Meta, all that stuff. But this was their first attempt at doing a VR experience. And you can kind of...
You can tell because you can pick up so many random things.
And that's in a lot of the reviews and stuff like that. People talk about... Like, it is a fun game, and it is received very well for what it is.
Yeah, I don't see what VR would bring to this, because you're sitting in a radio booth listening to people talk. I don't need VR for that.
I think it's just because it's like a low impact, you know, like hectic, like some of these VR experiences, just a chill experience where you could quite literally, because the whole point of the game, and then, you know, we'll go ahead and get to it for Killer Frequency. My brain broke there for a moment. So it's takes place in like 1987. You are a disgraced DJ from like New York or something. They don't really go into detail about what you did to get
fired,
get the boot. But you are, it's a year 1987. As the clock strikes midnight, a small town in Gallows Creek, USA, the former big city DJ, Forrest Nash, is live on the air.
This is Forrest Nash.
Yeah. At the 186.2, The Scream or whatever, or 86.
The Scream,
yeah.
Stupid stuff.
And so he's just having a, you know, enjoying his late midnight show.
No, I won't call it enjoying it. He's a wino.
Yeah, he's...
He's super butthurt. About where he is in life.
Oh, yeah. But as you're going through this, like the first call of the evening, is your second call. Your first call is an ongoing joke from Ponty's Pizza.
Ponty's the first call?
I think he's the first call talking about selling pizza, Ponty's Pizza.
Trying to get free advertisement on the radio.
Exactly. But then the second call you get is from the...
One of the deputies?
The dispatcher. She's the dispatcher for the town.
Yeah.
And she's like, the sheriff's dead. Like, what? What kind of prank call is this? Hang up on her. It's like, no. And then, like, your assistant, because you're Forrest Nash, and then you have your assistant, who's Peggy Walker. Mm. She's behind the class, and she's the one who's, like, screening the calls and sending them to you and doing a couple extra behind-the-scenes things for you. And she's like, no, that's...
The producer.
Producer, yeah. She's like, that's, you know, Sue or whatever. That's the dispatcher. I recognize her. She has coffee down. She's like, really? And then, like, it slowly, like, unveils, like, what's happening is there is a reoccurring serial killer, this dude called the Whistling Man. And he kind of pops up every...
Like a local town legend.
Yeah. And every year there's a Whistling Man prank day that all these high school kids do. And this so happens to be Whistling Night. And then people are dying. And then it gives you, like, a quick tutorial of kind of, like, what's happened, because you can't, your interactivity is very limited. You have the dispatcher on the other line explaining to you what she's seeing, and then you're helping her make choices. Because she's like, oh no, I hear the Whistling Man, and you can hear his eerie whistle in the background of her phone call. And she's like, what do I do? And you're like, you can tell her to hide, run, or fight.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just branching dialogues and stuff like that. You tell her to hide. She's like, what do I hide? Under the desk, in the closet, you know, this, that, and the other.
It doesn't get that deep all the time, but yeah, you need to make a couple of choices. Now, we didn't think we were going to get the 1K for this, because there is a beat the game in under 4 hours achievement, which apparently, well, we got, because it kind of just happens naturally on a playthrough.
Well, if you aren't lollygagging.
Yeah, if you aren't running around the, you know, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing right away, which is what we did, because you get a little bit of time between calls to run around the radio station a little bit.
And help you solve upcoming things. And without the guide, I don't think we would have. Because, like, there's one of the ones that probably one of the cooler ones and most confusing ones is there's a kid lost in, like, a corn maze.
Corn maze, yeah.
and you have to help him get out. And he's like, he'll run. He's like, take a left. And you have to have your map up or have it propped up in front of you on your little display thing. And he's like, okay, I'm at a bell. And you have to look at the map and you're
jumping ahead. But
yeah. And stuff like that. But like I said, the branching, I don't say branching narrative, but there is make everyone survive and then kill everyone.
Mm-hmm. There's the two kind of the two endings you can get, which we got both for the one.
Cat. And there's an achievement for having each individual person survive the night, and then there's one for having everybody survive, and then have everybody survive in under 4 hours, and then having kill everybody. So there's like 27 achievements. Majority of them are for the survivors, which I did get the 1K in about 8 hours 23 minutes.
Dude, killed you 7 hours and 26.
Well, I had to redo one of the parts when I was going through my kill everyone playthrough because I was just kind of like going through the motions, and I solved a puzzle when I wasn't supposed to have too quickly, and I had to like restart a whole section because because you can save whenever you want, but I'd just been going through and I didn't save, and I had to like load an auto save from like the start of the chapter, and I was like, that was just me just going too quick trying to get done with it. But yes, so like I said, that's kind of how it goes. You're started with this girl with the dispatcher. And then she
does the thing, which is, I feel like this would be a funny movie.
Oh, this movie, it would be a hilarious movie.
But she, I guess you can do this in a small town. She wants to run to the neighboring county to get, because like, there's like only like three cops in this town. She's one of them who's a dispatcher. There's a sheriff and a deputy, I guess.
There's a sheriff, because Forrest even cracks a joke. He's like, please don't tell me this is one of those bodunk towns that only has two police officers. She's like, no, we have three. Carl's just on vacation in Costa Rica.
So her thing is she's going to run to the neighbor, drive off. I think she gets away no matter what to get to the thing. She doesn't run off to get the.
She has to get away.
I think she has to get away. She has to bring the cavalry to from the neighboring. So she's running off. Her grand plan is to route all 911 calls to Forrest Nash and the radio station, which would never happen.
It's kind of funny.
There's a good suspension of disbelief there, but like,
well, she says her excuse is that you have the most experience
taking phone calls
being able to to handle a mass volume of in calls and stuff like that, and you can determine help and do what you can because I guess it's a very small town. There's like 100 people in this town, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure though.
I think there's a joke because he he's a wino. He's bragging about what he used to do in between calls with Peggy. He's like, I used to have, 5 million listeners. I think it was like 5 million listeners every night listening to my voice. And she's like, well, okay, well, you got about, 30. He's like, 30 million? That's crazy. She's like, no.
A big night's three or four. And he was like, yeah, 3,000 or 4,000. That's not great, but it's not too bad. She's like, no, 3 or 4 listeners.
But he
says a thing later where he talks about how he goes like 8 or 9. She's like 8 or 9,000. That's pretty good. He's like no, 8 or 9 million.
Yeah,
where he was in Chicago. Yeah, so they had that little exchange.
He's a big old wino.
Yeah, you can make him whine a whole lot more in the dialogue because there are a couple of times because you're given choices where you can be like supportive of people who are having a hard time, or you can be mean, or you can be whiny, and you can make him a big time wino.
Oh yeah,
I did the positive playthrough and then like the negative kind of playthrough.
Well, the funny thing is about the negative people tend to depends on who you are, but I've seen a lot of people just bragging about how funny the bad playthroughs are because like you'll literally. Because we've already mentioned it, that you have to get people to survive the night, you get people killed through whatever decisions and choices that you make, through these branching, not even branching.
But through branching.
Through these dialogue trees and everything like that. People were like, oh man, nothing's funnier than getting somebody killed and then cracking a huge joke about their death live on the air 2 seconds later.
And Peggy just goes, Forrest,
don't do it. Yeah.
And you can literally crack a joke after somebody was just killed.
Oh, yeah. And the game, like I said, if you are a fan of
the slashers,
80s slashers and meta horror movies where they have a little slight commentary on the stuff. And he's self-aware because there'll be certain points where he's like, trying to think, because I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself, but because you have access to the majority of the radio station. You have, like, there's, like, two bathrooms, a kitchen, a waiting area.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, you can go, eventually you go down and check the manager's office, and then there's, like, a whole basement area you can kind of go to for, like, storage.
And storage and stuff.
And then do you go to the rooftop?
No.
No, you don't go to the rooftop, but you do go outside. You go
outside.
You go outside, like, the area.
Like an alley.
Yeah, it's like an L-shaped alley around. And the game looks good for what it is. It's very limited.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like a Unity game.
Yeah, it's a it's like a cel-shaded animation almost.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the majority of the game is all from first... Actually, it's all from first person. And only twice, I think, are there like... Actually, there aren't any really QTEs. There's just like timed choices, but there's no actual having to match buttons.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. You're just answering questions.
Yeah.
There's a couple of times. I forget which ones and why that are timed. There's a couple of timed. Like in the heat of a killer chasing somebody, there's a few times.
Well, because they have to hide or they have to like do the proper thing.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that does stand out is you have the prologue where the dispatcher explains everything to Forrest. But before that, you have the actual like the tutorial. Mm-hmm. Of how to like interact with stuff, and it's somebody. They never address this, but because it's somebody who, you hear the screen fades to black. You hear the car door shut, and they're standing behind a chain link fence, and their car's behind them. And they walk down the alleyway, and it's like, ooh, use this button to pick up stuff. Use this stuff to open up doors, and all this stuff, and how to collect. And then you open the door into the radio station, and you get murdered. You get picked up and like strangled by the whistling man. But no one ever. Why was that person going into the building? They don't ever address that someone else was coming in that night, the janitor or anything like
wasn't
that.
Wasn't missing like a person they thought was coming? I don't remember.
I don't as far because having because we played it twice. In the second playthrough, I didn't even realize. I was like, oh, they don't ever address that they're waiting on somebody, unless that was just a random stranger. Maybe a janitor or something. I don't know, but
they talk about the janitor.
Yeah, they do. So I don't know.
They think the janitor's the killer for a little while.
Oh yeah, maybe. Like, they don't mention him supposed to be coming in, but it is strange that the tutorial is that someone you get murdered. You get murdered as the player character of the tutorial. There's 22 people that you can help survive through the night.
22. Really?
There's 22 of them.
That was like 8.
Mm-mm. There's 22 people. Now, some of them are linked together. Like,
that's way higher number than I thought.
Well, because you got to think about that one, like the teenager, the group of teenagers. Each one of them counts as a survivor.
There's like 5 of them.
Yeah, and stuff like that. There's other people. There's like the girl who's like helping mend the dude who got stabbed. So that's 2 right there. So there's stuff people lumped together. But there's 22 total people throughout the
game. I don't remember everybody dying playthrough involving 22 people getting killed.
They all, yeah.
I remember that.
But that also includes you and Peggy as well.
Yeah, I guess. I just remember that. That seems like a way high number.
It is, but like I said, they're all linked together. They're usually in sets. Very rarely is it just one person. And I think, oh God, one of the saddest ones is the dude with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And they count him and the dog.
Yeah.
But before we kind of like dive into maybe like if you had a favorite or something
I don't remember all of it. I think we can't do every single one of them. But I think the funny one is the group of teens who tried to put together this elaborate plan. And you have to like find... Where do you find the information about how...
One of their friends works as an intern at the station. You have to go down to her little cubby hole in the corner.
Yeah.
And she has like a... It's like a... one of those like Hot 100 Vogue quest is like, or you know, one of those stupid little magazine quizzes. And she had taken them for her friends because they're going to do like some camp together. And you have to take her answers based off what the other girl tells you over the phone and be like, who's going to be the best person to make...
Yeah, who's the watcher? Who's the person who grabs the key? Who distracts the killer? Who's the driver? And you assign all these different roles to these people, and then this one's funny but weird as she tries to like. It's only the one girl really voicing what's happening on that end of that one, but you got to watch them. And if you do on the kill thing, you do it wrong. Everybody has the wrong roles, and everybody's just getting killed by what's happening. That one's probably one of the better ones.
Yeah. Before we before we dive into everything, the game is your disc jockey over the radio. Everything is 100% voice acted.
Has to be.
And fairly well. I wasn't annoyed by anybody, really. Yeah.
Forrest Nash is irritating because he's a radio DJ. Well,
it's
because
his personality.
Yeah. Yeah. He's supposed to be irritating. Like that.
We have We have a couple of cool things. Let me find it real quick. Just want to make sure I say everything right. So before we dive into everything, I do want to do a little bit of people in the background, just like I always do. We have our director of the game. It's a lady named Kim Pierce. Again, the majority of these people, this is either their first or something very small that they've done. She has only directed three games total. One's called The Hotel Renovator, the game. Then Killer Frequency. And then the thing after Killer Frequency was an Agatha Christie Hercule Portrait, which is one of those. Perot? Yeah.
Hercule Perot?
Perot. Oh, okay. That is the detective. My bad. Yeah. For a lot of the Agatha Christie books. So she's done probably something similar. This is the only thing for Team 17 that she's done. So it's still pretty cool. We have four writers, which is crazy for what's going on. I guess if people had to do the branching paths, or maybe people were given specific scenarios or something. But the four writers, Matt Haberstein, John Lappin, Harry Schofield, and Jack Wilson, this is all the only thing that they've done. So kudos to them for being able to make a coherent, you know, story that does, like I said, does have branching paths. And I'm curious about someone playing through and having some people die and some people survive, because that would augment the flow of the story.
Yeah, well, most folks who play this aren't going to be following a guide anyway.
Yeah, which is fair. We also have two composers, a gentleman named Connor Tilston. This is the only thing he did, but he also was three voice acting roles, which is pretty cool. That's another thing. Like I said, he does three voice acting roles, and one of the writers, Jack Wilson, voices over one of the teenagers. So they're using in-house talent to help cope with, you know, some money, which is fine. And then the other composer, I'm guessing he's probably the main one. He has done quite a few things. No, scratch that. This is the only thing he did compose, but he worked sound design for three other kind of larger games, which I think is kind of cool. He did God of War Ragnarok, as well as the Lego Horizon. Hmm. He was like sound design and sound engineering and stuff like that, so that's pretty cool. But as far as composer, this is the only thing he did. But he didn't do any of the voice work. He just did that and sound design, like picking up and dropping. I didn't take note of all the voice actors. I only did two. I did Forrest Nash and Peggy, because you hear them most of the time of the game. Forrest Nash is voiced by Josh Cowdery. A couple of bigger things that he's done more recently. He's done live action and voice acting. I focused on specifically the voice acting. One, two, three, four things right here. More recently, a game called The First Descent. It's getting kind of popular now. I've seen a lot of people talk about The First Descent. He plays a character named Blair. He did voice work in Dead Island 2. His character named Danny. And now this is in Lego Marvel Superheroes 2, he was Captain America. And then in Triangle Strategy, he has two voices in that, Cycris and Flanagan. So he's kind of up and coming and doing some cool things. Yeah. And it's going to be weird, because I do want to play Triangle Strategy, and it's going to be weird when I play that and I hear those two characters. I'm like, that's...
Well, surely he's not doing the Forrest Nash thing.
I hope not, but that'd be really funny, because his character's name is Flanagan. This is Flanagan. Maybe he's a town crier. I don't know. But the other person, the lady who names Peggy Weaver, she's a much bigger voice acting thing. She's done 82 things, majority of which were all voice acting roles. She has also did work in First Descent as a character named Nell. She did work in Horizon Forbidden West as someone named Lily Barnett, which we haven't played Forbidden West yet. She has voice work in Elden Ring. She's one of the voices you get to pick as the main protagonist. She is young protagonist 1, type B. So she's one of the voices that you can have as your speaking role.
Her character talks in Elden Ring?
I guess I don't know much about Elden Ring, other than I do want to play it. She has gone on to do voice work in Ni No Kuni 2, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Dragon Quest 11. Witcher 3, she's something called Godling Johnny, which I don't, maybe if we pull up a picture, I might recognize it, but so many things happen. Yeah. She has a name, a specific name, Godling Johnny. And then she did work in, I guess it was how she got work in Elden Ring 3, but in Dark Souls 2, she voices three different, like, sub-characters and stuff. She's like a merchant, and then a boss, and then something else.
We played that not too long ago. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't recognize the names, unfortunately. They don't stand out. Oh, and actually, one of them, she was like the stone trader. So she was like the blacksmith's daughter who you rescue, and she comes back to that little hub town. So that's the only one I remembered. But like I said, so voice acting, you know, great all around. Like you mentioned, your favorite was probably the kids. Mm-hmm. And having that play out, both versions is fun. Having it play out, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe we survived. And then having it play out the bad way, where you pick wrong, like, oh my God. And she's just...
Yeah, I think there's the one girl, the one who's talking, is she the one... She always...
I think no
she
matter what, it, she survives.
So she can tell you about everything bad
so
that's happened.
So she can call... That's the other thing. Is some of these things, people will call back in after the fact and deliver the bad news or something to you. And then that's when he gets to make... You have to option. It's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm glad you're okay.
Or crack a joke.
Or just crack a really bad joke. You know, party of five, only one showed up, you know, some stupid stuff like that. And then I've seen people talking about just fun. Like I said, it's not super branching, but just being able to kill everyone, because it does change the story quite mm-hmm. a bit. Because people who die, and he'll even reference it too sometimes. If someone like dies, he's like, and you come across some evidence, and you know, like, you're like, oh, so-and-so's the coroner. Ah, she died. I wish we could have talked to her again. And so it does make the second playthrough a little bit shorter, but it's still like close to 4 hours.
Mm-hmm. You have something besides the kids, the group of kids scenario?
I'm trying to think of all the ones in two kind of stand out. Like I said, I mentioned earlier, it's probably one of the harder ones in the game if you don't have a guide. It's the kid who's lost in the corn maze.
I would not even wanted to do that. You have a corn maze map.
Yeah.
And he's calling out where he's at on the map. I mean, it's cool, but like I would have not wanted... I don't know if I would have liked this game as much if I didn't know of my two playthroughs what I was doing.
Yeah, because it's like...
Which I guess defeats the whole purpose of playing the game.
Because you're literally like, take a left, take a right. He's like, I'm at a golden line. You have to look for the line symbol and direct him which way. But the way he's saying he has to turn, you have to try to orientate to what he's saying. He's like, I'm facing the lion. So you're like, okay, the lion's here. So I have to like, you can't even tilt the map. You have to like turn your head and be like, all right. So he needs to go left to make, you know, that one probably would have been the most annoying.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really funny for that one is if you're doing the kill playthrough, like if the guide's like, you can just make him go to a dead end and get got, or you can talk him back into running into the killer. Because the kid's just terrified, he's following you at everything that you say, and so you're like take a left, okay, I'm at a four-way stop, and you're like, turn around and run back, he's not gonna find you. You're like, are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. You turn around and run back, because oh my God, he's here. And you just hear him get brutally murdered on the phone call, and they're like, Forrest, what did you do? He's like, I don't know, man, I'm scared too, I don't know how to do this. But you can just literally just have him turn around and run to his death and cut that scene completely in half.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure to put on a radio host.
Yeah, a lot. And then I think the sad one I'm not really going to talk about is when the person breaks in and kills a guy and his dog. And he's like, oh, that sucks. That just hurtful. But one of the cooler ones is the investigative journalist. And you guys set that trap and they lock the person in the room. And you have to like, we're going to call this phone in this office. Because
mm-hmm.
he faxes you over a copy of the floor plan or whatever. Mm-hmm. And part of your getting him killed is you like, I lost it, man. I don't know where it's at. I can't find it. So he like sends you like three copies, and then he ends up dying at the fax machine. But his is kind of, that's intricate, because that's cool, because you have the map that you get off the fax machine. And he's like, okay, so go. I'm gonna call this extension in this room. The guy's gonna go over there. I need you to run straight across the hallway to that. You know, you can. And that's actually pretty cool, and have him survive and stuff like that.
I forget who that person is in that office.
He's the investigative journalist. I forget his name, but yeah, I forget, because like a lot of the names are just, oh, it's Billy or Sue. Like
it's just regular people in a regular town.
The game, being what it is, being a horror movie, you know, a serial killer, it is littered with all sorts of references and stuff like that. One of the main ones being Ponty's Pizza. He calls in. He's like an ongoing joke throughout the whole thing. And he'll be like, we slashing our prices tonight. And they're like, get off of here. Like, you get so mad at that guy.
Ponty calls, what, three or four times?
Four or five, honestly. He calls in a bunch.
He calls in, like, not talking like a different person. And all of a sudden,
he's like, I want to give a special shout out to Ponty's Pizza. Like, he's probably one of the funnier thing, and he'll just like, oh, I want to call in and give my condolences to so and so and let them know that if they come down to Ponty's Pizza, I'll give them 50% off on two large pizza toppings. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Your character genuinely gets really mad at him and stuff like that. It's
you
really
do a couple other cool things too. Like those are the calls We talked about you get to...
You do get to be a DJ.
Yeah. Yeah, you pretty much... So, like, she'll tell you to, like, when you're waiting for a call or you're waiting for the game to, like, do the next part, mm-hmm. you have a bunch of records. You can collect more records around the thing, too. I don't really care about none of this random 80s music. I don't know if it's licensed. Maybe it's licensed. I don't know.
One or two of them might have been.
But you get to grab the... You can thumb through, the, like, literally thumb through the records and pick one out. And she's like, play a song... Net Forest, and he'll put it. You turn to your right, put it on the record, and hit.
You have to drop the needle and hit the play button
and play on it, and then I'll just start playing a song. And that's when you're playing a song is when and this plays on repeat, I guess, while you go wander around the building.
Yeah, go find the stuff that you're looking for, like the little map in the intern's office, or
because she's still worried about having dead air on a night when everybody's getting murdered.
Yeah,
worried about doing her job correctly.
She's trying to do it. That's the other thing. She's so focused on trying to make sure she does her job because you're off doing that stuff. She is still taking calls and screening calls because when you get back, or she hit the intercom button. She's like, "Forrest, I got a call for you." So like it is like she's
and they make you. Stop the music and then press the button to talk to the caller, which is kind of cool.
And then you do have a soundboard that you never use. Like, there's an achievement for using the soundboard.
Just pressing a button, it pops an achievement. But you have like a, you can like, while people are talking, you can press like laughter. They can't hear it, I guess, but you're like, it's just only for you, the player, because nobody comments on the buttons that you're pressing.
I kind of wish there would be.
Yeah. Because you could like press it like, oh, I'm getting stabbed. You can go, wah, wah, wah. Like, you can press all the buttons.
It's like eight buttons or something.
Yeah, but it's only for like crickets. And I guess it doesn't have any impact on anything that's happening. And so you get the achievement just for pressing one of them.
And then the other thing is throughout the course of the game, you have commercial breaks.
Yeah.
And there's like four commercial breaks. There's like the karate studio. And one really funny thing is like depending on when you do it, because you have to play all four for an achievement. There's like some stupid politician, Teddy Gallows Jr. or something, mm-hmm. and he's responsible like for some other stuff. It's called Gallows Creek. He's Teddy Gallows. He's an uppity jerk, and his family founded the town. But he'll come in and say like a message about it, his little thing. And then there's like the Grillinator, which is like someone's trying to sell a grill. Then there's like Uncle Billy Bob's like judo kung fu studio, come check it out. And if you play that one earlier, there's a part later where you're trying to help a guy survive. He's like this heavy set guy, and if he wins, he's like, yeah, think Billy Bobby's radio, because he talks about he went to the studio and learned how to do judo. But then if he fails, he's like, why would I take karate lessons from an idiot on a radio named Billy Bob? It was like his last words as he's being murdered. So I think it's kind of funny. That stuff's going on. And then there's another one. I can't remember what the last one was.
That was for the festival.
Oh, for the corn festival. For
yeah.
Where the corn maze was.
Yeah, the corn maze festival. That's the fourth advertisement.
And that's, you can collect all four of those. And
yeah, well, everybody hates Teddy Gallows. You could play I think I played his advertisement earlier in the thing just because I was just grabbing the closest tape. But you can grab that, and then he calls in once or twice, and everybody hates this guy.
Yeah.
It's funny to, like, play his radio advertisement and then, like, have him call in and, like, both Peggy and Forrest talk trash to this guy.
What's really funny is how it went for me, just because I was just taking the tape and playing it, taping the tape, and when he called in, everyone hated on him. The very next commercial break I did was advertising, please vote for Teddy Gallows Jr. I was just like, that's hilarious, because I had no idea.
Yeah,
I had no idea. And you can literally treat your office like... I ended up treating my office like crap after a certain point because, like, I wanted to
chuck crap all over the house.
Yeah, because you can pick up everything and drop everything. The only things that don't drop are like the music records. You can drop them, but they magically reappear back in their little stack of stuff. But I was literally taking those tapes and just chucking it behind me because if I didn't need it, it was behind me. Because you go through, you have at one point you do have to help a lady like hotwire a car. You have to go pick up like a magazine to figure out what model it was, how to hotwire it, and like all these, you pick up all these like clues to help you progress. But then once you're done with them, you no longer need them.
Mm-hmm.
So like I just kept tossing stuff behind me. I had like every item in the game was just strewn on the floor. And then, like I said, you can pick up so many things.
It's just like when you play, people played Gone Home the first time back mm-hmm. in the day, and you just pick up every little knickknack and item in the house.
You don't get to pocket it. You get to pocket some stuff in like your inventory, like certain details, like mostly the keys. But I read reviews and stuff. People were like, man, hold on, let me see where do I have the review. Was it a screenshot or was I take a picture of it? So this review was like, I call it the trash basket simulator. I hoarded every coffee mug in the station, swished several balls, and then got everyone murdered in town while cracking a couple of jokes. 10 out of 10 in gaming experience. So you can literally go around and grab every stapler, every sheet of paper, every notebook, and just and
it's nonsense.
It mops, fire extinguishers. You can grab all sorts of lamps. Yeah. I was playing through on my killing everyone playthrough because you do have downtime in between calls. So it's like, I don't want to just stand here and wait. So I literally was like collecting stuff. I collected so much stuff the game lagged a little bit every time because it just keeps it. So I'd open up my door to the studio of the game, would like stutter because I just had so much stuff to just throw it on the coffee table in there.
I didn't know you were doing that.
I was trying to just make it a little more fun for myself while waiting for the game clock to trigger the next story events and stuff like that. And it's very, talking about that, it's very well received.
I don't know what the game itself is.
Because it's one of those things where it's like a specific audience. People who don't want an 80s slasher or like a horror comedy, a meta horror comedy.
It's also a 100% talking game. People got to be ready for that. Yeah, people would maybe try to call this a walking simulator, but it's really not. It's mostly just like I wouldn't call it like the walk like a Telltale game, but you are just kind of standing. Everything, the main things that happen are you standing
it's like at the radio. Disc jockey simulator, maybe.
Yeah. But you're mostly just doing it's mostly a talking game.
Because it just like. Now, this was just on Xbox. I took this morning or whatever just to look at it, just to check out the reviews. 350 reviews, which is pretty massive. It sets it a 4.9 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, I don't know why you're quoting Xbox. We've never quoted Xbox
reviews. I know, it's just the fastest thing I could find. Because when I click on the reviews for the game, people are just like, oh, yeah, we liked it. And there wasn't any like, oh, we like the concept and all that stuff. But it seems to be everything I looked at seemed to be very well received.
Especially for a game nobody's heard of.
Exactly. Let's see here. Some of the other like cool things, like I said, the game is loaded with references and stuff like that, especially if anyone who's a fan of any sort of the horror movies and stuff like that. Like I said, specifically Ponti's Pizza is a very... It's. I didn't finish that thought earlier when I brought that up. It's called Pontypool. It's a UK... zombie movie from like 2008 or something like that. It's actually a very fairly well received zombie film with people who like the zombie genre. And he's Ponty for Pontypool. And then there is the Barker Public Library for Clive Barker. Then there's the Ripley's Records for Ellen Ripley from the Aliens. And there's like a bunch of different like subtle just references, just people's names and stuff in there and such. But I think it's, you know, it's fine. I do think it's cool. And it is, for what it is, I did enjoy the experience. Now, if I didn't have a guide, I probably would have been a little more frustrated at certain parts, like trying to tell the woman how to hotwire or trying to find, like, these frequencies on, like, a... Because every puzzle you encounter they did do a really good job of everything you doing was different. You didn't repeat a single
conveniently
puzzle.
Everything's in the radio station. Yeah.
Everything you need is in the radio station.
And the perfect magazine, the map of something there's a town map on the wall but then there's like all these various things. It never like it somehow doesn't seem ridiculous sometimes when you find this stuff.
Because as you're going through it, she gives you some background. She's like, oh, our receptionist loves mazes. And she's always trying to do these mazes on her desk. She might have like a book of mazes or the map for the corn maze. So you go down there, and sure enough,
it's in the trash can.
It's in the trash can. And then someone else is, so-and-so ordered pizza. And so like when you have, one of the things.
And then the girl's getting murdered and you want to send help her way. And the only way is to like.
There's a frat party happening down the street.
You know, and he's like, oh, we'll send them a pizza with a message in it.
Yeah.
I was like, they're not going to look at this message in this pizza box.
Ooh, if a free couple of pizzas just showed up at your house with a note that says, call this number, and you're like, well, they paid for pizza. I guess we'll call and see what they sent pizza for. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. Because she's like scared in her house. And then you have you to
call this guy, call this jock guy.
Call this jock dude to go, hey, so, you know, your neighbor. He's like, oh, yeah, I know Miss. So-and-so, she's being attacked. I need you to take your party down there to try to help her and stuff like that. Yeah. That's kind of cool. He's like, hey, bro, we totally saved Miss Sally. Thanks for the pizza, Nash. And then, because I think one of the things to prove that you are really live on the air is they request a song and you have to play that song. But that's, it's also one of the, it's like hidden in the kitchen. It's like one of the things. And it seems, I know this seems crazy, but like you said, when you suspend the disbelief.
I suppose that might be a fun movie.
Oh, it'd be a really fun movie. I think it'd be a blasty blast. But like everything seems ridiculous that it's all there, but they give you a story beat to read to why it makes sense that things are there.
Yeah, as much as it can.
As much as, you know, a single sentence or a single line.
Well, talk about, do you remember who the, kind of when it puts together who the killer is and why and stuff like that, you know, put all that. Is it the why is kind of lame?
Yeah. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played.
Yeah. So if you want to play it through and figure out who the, I don't think you're given a whole lot of legit clues on who the killer is. They do call you beforehand. They do call into the radio station a couple of times. Yeah,
they do call a couple of times as a concerned citizen. Like, oh my God, I hope so-and-so's okay. And no, can you play me this song, Nash? Mm-hmm. You know, like they request the song and this, that, and the other. So spoiler alert, if you have not played and finished Killer Frequency, stop listening now. Go. I think it's fairly cheap. I think even full price, I think it's like $15. I don't think it's a very expensive game.
Full price is $24.99, which is steep for a 4 hour, 3 or 4 hour game.
Yeah.
As of the recording, it's on sale for $7, but by the time you hear this,
it might not be
on sale. But we got Halloween times coming up.
Yeah. It'd be a great
game. And check your PlayStation Pluses, maybe.
Yeah. But the cool thing is, as you're listening through and you're getting everyone's backstories, it's a small town, everyone's connected, and then it ends up being like 30 years ago or something. There was a whistling night that happened, and these jocks end up trying to scare a kid, and they scared him too bad.
He fell off a cliff.
And he ends up like falling. He walked backwards all the way until he fell off like a cliff, and ended up dying. And 30 years later, throughout the game, all the main people who have died were people who were there. Like, unfortunately, the guy with the dog was one of the jocks that was there at the party. He's a guy who didn't speak up after the fact, and they helped cover it up. And then one of the other people ends up being Teddy Gallows Jr. He's the guy who was in the mask that scared the kid that had him. So he's the actual guy who kind of caused the kid to die. And there's like a few other people that were there that evening. So, you know, someone's girlfriend at the time and this, that, and the other. And then it gets revealed that the killer is actually the young man who fell to his death. It is his girlfriend at the time and her son.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's some confusion. You're like, how can the killer be around town so quick and be in so many places all at once? Because there's two of them. Because there's a question where like he's locked inside.
Well, there's like the one where he's like clearly all the way across town murdering somebody, and then there's like somebody at the radio station causing a ruckus too, and they're like, how did he get here so fast?
Exactly. Yeah.
And you come to find out it's just two people.
It's two people.
It's just like Scream 1 kind of stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's still cool. And the reveal of everything, because you can, as it progresses, because you can talk them up or talk them down and have them kill Teddy Gallows and kill these people and stuff like that. Being able to like, well, you know what, Teddy, shut up. That's probably one of the most satisfying things in the game, because the big reveal is she reveals who she is. She actually has Teddy Gallows Jr. tied to a chair and she's just beating him. And every time he goes to say something, you're just like, shut up, Teddy. Every time you open your mouth, it makes her want to hit you harder. And she does. Stop it. Because it's really cool, because as that exchange is happening, because he's like, I thought you were the killer. And then the killer walks into the room. Because that's the first time you leave. It's actually the only time you're in the producer's booth. And you get locked in there. And then the killer walks into this thing and just kind of stands there staring at you, holding a knife or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it's revealed that there's a second one. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. It pulls you in.
Except for the son. The person's son's kind of pointless.
He has no...
She just like has this son that she...
groomed to be a murderer.
Yeah.
Basically. Just, he has no personality. He doesn't...
I don't even know if he says it.
He doesn't say a line of dialogue. He'll wave at you with his fingers. You know, that little finger wave. And that's about it. And then it's revealed, too, that your assistant is actually her little sister. There's like a 10-year age gap between the two of them.
Peggy's sister.
Yeah, and she and they have like a heartwarming thing, and then she could still end up killing Peggy, or you can sort of keep Peggy alive and stuff like that. So like, there's a lot of cool little twists and turns and stuff that I enjoyed it. I didn't really see it coming. Like I knew like when this person called in, I'm like, okay, this person's definitely something's wrong with them. They're either the killer or working with the killer, and I was right. But I didn't see the Peggy thing, and it was fun. Like I said, it would make a great. Like I said, a little 90-minute horror comedy would be fantastic. I would have a blast watching this. Trying to think.
Anything else?
Because
it's hard to talk about there's so little gameplay and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. Like, so we mentioned the stuff that you can do and like the helping to create the puzzles. And you do go down. There's a basement you go down into when you first think it's the janitor.
Yeah.
There's like a whole like maze you go through. With like dipping between furniture and stuff like that and connecting some of the pieces. And that's pretty cool. It does lead to some creepy moments. Because like you...
Yeah, I would say this game's ever scary.
No. There's like jarring stuff. I mean, it's horror because it's what's going on. But there's some moments that might make you feel uneasy. Just, you know, or they time stuff that like, it triggers no matter what you do. Like there's a thing where you're running around the basement or you're trying to leave the basement and then just a bunch of cans fall over. Like outside, you know, just these sound triggers that make you like, oh, you can turn around and look around. Or doors, you know, that the doors opening and closing. And just because is it a stormy night? I think at one point there's like a thunderstorm that rolls through or something. Because I remember there being, because you lose power. But that might be because she popped
the breaker. That's the person popping the breaker, yeah.
There is a, I hope Brian can find it. Because there is a title track that plays during the credits called Killer Frequency.
I'm sure you can. Hopefully.
I mean, he should be able to find it. I hope that it's kind of silly and fun that plays.
You can probably play the podcast out with that.
Yeah.
Because that's literally the credits. So. Yeah.
And then there's a bit of an epilogue, too, that plays like at the very end. And I'm confused on if this is Forrest Nash or somebody else. But there's a TV playing or a radio playing. And it's giving you like kind of epilogue about like the evening because as it goes on. But I think you're the killer because as you look at the wall, there is it's a Polaroids of all the people's faces. It's like a vague impression of a person because you never see anybody's face. You don't even see Peggy's face because she's like in a dim lit room. You see her silhouette and you never see it. You never actually see her. Mm-hmm. That's, I guess, how they cut. And the only person you interact with face to face is the killer. And he or she is just wearing a mask. But you have like these vague impressions of like a face and then there's a name under it and then he has a big the red X if they died or if they didn't they survived. That's how you can track your progress to double be better on your subsequent playthroughs. But I very much enjoyed it. Did you have one of the terms I've heard people say it too was called, they call it like a reverse escape room because you're the person directing people how to get out of the escape room. I've heard people say it that too and stuff like
it's not that elaborate, but
yeah,
I guess some parts of it can be that elaborate, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Did you have anything else you wanted to add before you got to
I feel bad because this is a cool game. It's kind of hard to sell it. It's kind of hard to sell a talking game with words.
Yeah.
As much as silly as that sounds.
It's a murder mystery, and you're trying to help people survive the night, and the choices...
I would say, at the very least, say it's unique. I mean, like...
Oh, yeah.
And this is literally just a random Gamefly game we got. I didn't know what it was.
Call is that like a second person horror? Because the stuff's not happening to you, it's happening to other people that you're community. Is that like a second person horror? Because they're explaining to what's going on to them, and
I don't know.
Because I don't even know what you would call that. It's like indirect or passive horror. Because it's not happening to you. Because you're safe miles away in your phone booth, and you're like, oh, try to do this.
Safe till the end, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah. But I say it's definitely
it's worth considering and worth playing. Yeah, definitely get it on sale. It's not $25. I know we're all about, you gotta support the developers. I'm like, you gotta support the developers. You also gotta know what you're working with. Mm-hmm. Anyway, if this is only, I mean, if it were like $15 full price, pay $15. It's definitely worth it because
you'll probably play through it more. Even if you're not trying to get an achievement, you might play through it twice because everybody, I feel like anybody who enjoys it will try to make everybody live
and then try to get, you know, kill everybody
for fun
and then crack a massive joke about that person's demise being on air.
I think he makes pun jokes.
He makes really, really bad pun jokes because she even talks about one of the first things you do is you make a joke. She's like, oh, Forrest, nobody likes puns. And you're like, I love them, or I hate them too, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to I guess, did you write down a rating?
I did not, but I mean, obviously, I think because we rarely ever talk about games we really hated. It's not very often talk about games we hated, so we end up with the same average, I think, of fill around. I feel like if you know what you're getting into with this game and you enjoy this kind of stuff, I think it's like an easy seven. Yeah. Like seven, let's say, jokes I made after somebody got murdered out of 10. Like, it's like, and I hate, because I think all our ratings end up like 6, 7, 8s and stuff like that. We don't play very many masterpieces, obviously. It's hard to play really, really great games. We have a couple of higher ratings here, probably, but we're never going to really, how often are we going to bring something on the podcast we just like really, really hated?
True, but if we're going to talk about it,
I have something that I hated that I want to that I might talk about on an episode like 151 mm-hmm. after our guest. We're going to do a palate cleanse, and I want to talk about it. We might talk about a couple of games that we played recently that might not be on the podcast. We'll discuss that later. There's a game that I hated recently, like really, really hated. I spent a whole weekend on it. You know what I'm talking about? I want to mention it because it's I don't know, the game was just completely awful, which it surprised me how awful it was. So there won't be an episode on that game, but I want to talk about it briefly about my little weekend spent with a game. I'll bring that up later. But like I say, like you're probably around. Go ahead and do yours. I mean, you're probably a 6, 7, or an 8, just because it's a good time as long as you know what you're getting into.
Yeah, like I said, it's now again, my experience might be skewed because I used a guide. I was never lost. I knew exactly where to do, where to go.
Yeah, being lost might change the experience.
Some people think it depends. Some people are like, oh, a guide ruins the experience. A guide, for me, the guide enhanced it because I wasn't lost. I wasn't angry. I wasn't being like, what do I do now? Especially, like I said, some of those things like the corn maze or trying to figure out which place that frat party ordered food from to get them to go save the lady. Like, it would have been kind of...
There's like three restaurants to choose from.
Yeah, there's like a Chinese place. But I'm not going to go into detail. But yeah, there's a couple of choices. Like, there's really cool puzzles. And like I said, every single one of them is unique. No, they didn't repeat themselves. And I give them credit for not repeating themselves, mm-hmm. especially in like such a short time frame. They could have did the same thing every time. Mm-hmm. I give it 8 passive horror experiences out of 10.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very worth cool doing. Game. And if you like, because it is 1987, if you do like the 80s, there's a lot of really cool, like, I get burnt out on it because that wasn't my era, but there's some cool synth music. There's the music.
I don't know if if you look up if the music is licensed. There's like 8 albums to collect, 8 or 10 albums. Mm-hmm. You got to play them all throughout the night. You don't have to listen to them all, but you got to play them all to get achievements. We did that. You got to just pop them on there and play them. It's just 80s music. Again, not sure if it's
licensed or not.
Licensed or just something they wrote for the game.
It's fine. Like I said, if you like that particular genre of music and type of music,
they're full songs.
There are full, like, you know, 2.5 minute songs and stuff like that. Yeah. I think that about covers it.
One of the guys calls in. I know we're wrapping up. One of the guys, like, one of the songs is a new track from somebody that Nash knows.
Yeah.
Is a famous.
And that dude's manager calls in. It's like, why haven't you played so-and-so's song yet? Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Forgot about that part.
I'm like, oh, you're friends with so-and-so? He's like, yeah, we go way back. He's like, I was there when he played his first hit or whatever. And this, again, backstory that, like, he was big. Nash used to be really big, but they don't ever go into detail. As to why I think that might dilute things.
You mentioned that. I know we're having to wrap it up, but like Nash doing the radio guy stuff is pretty funny because sometimes he'll answer the call, even though, because he's expecting to be a radio DJ stuff, but the 911 calls come in and he'll be like, hey, this is Forrest Nash, and you're listening to 101.1 The Scream. And they're like, who the hell is this? I tried to call 911.
I called 911. Who is this? And he's like,
and then sometimes he'll be like, or somebody will call in, they're kind of panicking, and they're like, what's happened? Who is this? He'll go, this is Forrest Nash from the this is Forrest Nash. They're diverting the calls to me. So he does a good.
He has to like catch himself.
Should have mentioned that stuff earlier. It was kind of
I is a horror comedy. There are this would be a hilarious movie.
I think it'd be a lot. We'll have a real good time.
Well, the other thing too is because it is a passive experience, so there's no animation or anything like that. You just hear sound effects. Mm-hmm. So like a movie would be like
it would cut to it.
You'd get to see the actual thing play out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that'd be the only problem with the movie is like, do you pick everyone lives or do you pick everyone dies?
Yeah.
So that'd be
modern horror, everybody survives.
If they want to do it right, they should follow Clue and give you 3 different endings: one everyone lives, one everyone dies, and one where people go half.
That's expensive.
I know it's expensive, but like that's
certainly. If people didn't know the movie Clue, if you went and saw it in theaters, like now on a Blu-ray, you can watch them all, or DVD, you can watch them all. When Clue was in theaters, different theaters showed different endings.
Yeah. And people were talking about it and like, what, that theater had a different ending? My theater had a different ending. So people were going to different theaters and watching the movie multiple times. Mm-hmm. When you play it on DVD, this I'm talking about Clue, but you can watch all, you can play it to where all three play out, or you can click it to play and it'll just give you a random ending of the three.
Yeah.
And it's Clue's a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. But I think that'd be kind of a cool way to make the film.
Yeah, it's a way, definitely a way to make it. Well, that's it.
Yeah. So, do you want to give the good news about the next episode? And that's
it's always good news. I mean, we're gonna talk about some more video games.
Fair.
So we know we have a returning guest plus bonus. Mm-hmm. On a recent time seeing Emerge. We were hanging out with Jared, talking to Jared about just stuff in general. And he was like, well, he's like, I know I've been on your podcast. You talk about video games. If you like video games, then you've got to talk to Cody, my guitarist. Dude loves Resident Evil more than anybody I've ever met or whatever, you know. It's like, okay, well, we'll have Cody on. And Jared's like, well, I can come too. And I'm like, hell yeah. Wow. Both of y'all come on. We'll talk about Resident Evil. So we're going to have Cody and Jared come on. I want to try to keep this one focused on video games because we want to talk about
specifically for Resident Evil as a franchise.
So it's going to be a Resident Evil franchise. Apparently Cody is a fanatic, which is awesome. We love people who love video games. Oh, so yeah. We're going to talk a whole lot about Resident Evil. It's going to be a whole lot of Resident Evil talk, man. We've had a Resident Evil 2 episode on the podcast. We've talked about stuff in passing
while you're talking.
And we played Resident Evil 3, but haven't talked about it. We're trying to warm up our Resident Evil experience for that podcast. We played 2 and 3. Then I played Resident Evil 8. Which Blake now doesn't have time.
I don't have time, probably.
Well, I mean, well, my whole playthrough,
like 2-3 weeks.
My whole playthrough was like 8 hours for Resident Evil 8.
I might finish the game that I'm on
and try to squeeze it in
and do that, and then turn on the game we have planned after. I think I have time for that.
You might, but we'll see. And we haven't, we've messaged them guys back and forth trying to get it all scheduled. But so we don't know. So it'll all be whatever you hear on the podcast will be everything we hear about from Cody will be the first time we're hearing it. So it'll be kind of fun to watch him and get it. You know, hopefully we'll get excited and talk about Resident Evil. We're not like, I'm not chasing Resident Evil games, but like I enjoy them when we dabble.
I've played, except
for that podcast, I guess. We'll talk about our Resident Evil histories on that podcast a bit. But anyway, so episode 150 will be Jared and Cody from Emerge joining us to talk about Resident Evil. And with that, we also want to thank Jared and I guess and also Cody, because Jared gave us permission anyway without probably even asking the other guys. But Jared and all the guys from Emerge for letting us use the song Letting Go for the intro for our podcast. It's often the best part of the podcast. It's probably your favorite part of this podcast was hearing the beginning of Letting Go at the start of this. And we want to thank Mladen Markovic, a.k.a. Devious Pixel, for the art for this podcast and the new art that you will see for the guests we threw together, something that we think is funny.
I can't wait to ask them on that, what their opinion
is. They like it. Yeah, everybody tends to like their art we have, I think. I think Daniel's using. I'll give a mention. Daniel is. He's got his computer fixed. Our cousin Daniel for his YouTube Zacovius channel. He's got his stuff going back up again. And I think his new key art for his thing is. I think it's a Zacovius. It's a Devious art. So you can check that out too.
His original one was a Devious art too.
Yeah. So yeah. Go support Devious. He'll be a link to his stuff in the show notes here if you need some art. And don't forget, I haven't mentioned this in a long, long time. Artists aren't like Devious isn't just locked into the style that we have for our podcast. If you want to support an artist and get some, if you need some artwork done, reach out to him. He doesn't just do things in our style.
Yeah. We happen to like it. I think he's mentioned to me, like, you know, talk about his favorite things is he likes animals and creatures.
Which we've given him none of that.
We have.
We gave him a raptor one time.
We've given him a couple of things. Just different things. Our big 100 in co-op endeavors.
Yeah, I'm not wearing it right now. But yeah, so there's some zombies and robots and
he really enjoys creatures because they're challenging, because you can put them in different shapes and stuff like that. He likes
creatures. So go and message Mladen and give him some give him some creatures to think about. We gave him a couple of zombies on the new one.
Well, he's also had like a Cthulhu creature, some UFOs, giant robots. Like
we'll give him some cool
stuff. I've given him, I wish I could give him some more stuff, but I was like, well, no, this is for the guest. I can't just have, Jared's second art.
Was that one with the dragon, with him shooting lightning at the dragon? The
two-headed dragon.
We talked about pretty, Souls games.
That was pretty dope, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we love those that stuff.
Talk about stuff y'all can't see, which you can if you go check out these those guest episodes. You can check out their artwork. Or
stuff like that. But anyway, that's all I got. So join us in a couple of weeks. I think we've scheduled this correctly to come out like it's supposed to, but if the episode is late, it's because we're trying to schedule having four people on a call at the same time, and that's
with two people who are actively making music
tour. Yeah, because Emerge it does have tour dates, so we'll go to Emerge's website, go to their Spotify, play those songs on repeat, see if they're coming anywhere near their tour. And like he posted like four more dates the other day, mm-hmm. like yesterday, but so go see them live, support them, tell them we sent you. That's what I got. So hopefully everything lines up with our schedules and we get that episode out at an appropriate time. But just keep an eye out for it coming out, because you'll want to hear that one, because Jared always. I might not go into Jared tells incredible like music stories. He's always give us really good music stories. Just playing around in that world. But I'm gonna try to keep this one video game focused, just because we got so much Resident Evil to talk about.
Oh yeah,
that's all I got.
Speaking of cool. You know, cool ideas for movies and horror movies. We do have a brother podcast called Suspension of Disbelief, where me and our good buddy Steve take turns semi-surprising each other about a movie each week, and we don't talk about it till we record. Mm-hmm. So yes, you get to come and hear our first thoughts on things. Our most recent episode, speaking of horror, is actually kind of cool. We're going like doing.
Well, it's not recorded yet.
It's not recorded yet, but we're recording it soon, and it's going into like what. What makes a horror icon?
Yeah, what it takes to be a horror icon.
And so we're kind of doing, like, we're going to the beginning. We're talking about, like, horror. It's not a deep dive into horror history. It's just the horror icons, things that are classified as icons. But we got some stuff that starts all the way back in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And so I think that'll be fun. The goal is we're going to break that into, like, two episodes. I think that'll be fun. So come, whenever that comes out, we'll let you know. Please join.
Yeah, if you don't know, but if you scroll through the movie history on that podcast and you don't know all the movies, maybe this horror themed two-part episode coming up will be your intro into that podcast with Blake and Steve,
which will be kind of cool and fun. And speaking of horror as well, I do have a short story that I self-published through Amazon called They Come This Night. Very super proud of that. Please go read that, rate that, review that so it gets more popular. I love it. I'm super proud of it. And with that being said, I want to wish everybody a good evening and good night.
Oh, yeah. And thanks, Brian, for editing the podcast. I got all excited about all the Emerge stuff and Jared and forgot.
Well, it's okay. Brian can be an afterthought. He's used to it.
Oh, God. All right, Brian. We messed up the end here, but there you go, Brian. We do act really appreciate you, buddy. All right, bye.